Great. Well, let's see who's coming up first.
Okay, I hope I'm doing this in the right order then. Austin?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. So I want to ask a question about Becky Hammon, and just from a standpoint, what do y'all think that, like, what she's done for women's basketball as a whole? Are you happy that if she was a part of any organization, that she's a part of the Spurs because of Greg Popovich, debatably the GOAT coach of all time? Or would it have been better if she was on a bigger stage, like in New York or Los Angeles? I know that she fairly recently became the first female head coach in a game because Pop has a tendency to get ejected. But at the same time, I don't think Pop is the type of person to give someone a role because of politics, because of gender. He's type of like, he doesn't care who you are, what you are. He's just going to do it because if he thinks if you're actually talented or not. So what do you feel about Becky Hammon, her dynamic in San Antonio, and what she's done for women's basketball as a player and as a
Oh, 100%. Becky Hammon was not drafted, and she was too short and too this and too slow and too that. And at the end of the day, she made herself an all-star in the NBA. And then after that, she's had a great opportunity to coach. And like you mentioned, and I'm glad you mentioned it because Greg Popovich is not going to, he's not going to do you a favor to hire you unless he knows that you are qualified. He's trying to win basketball games. He's trying to win championships. He's not going to hire a coach, whether she's a female or a male, just because it's good publicity. Like, he doesn't believe in that. So the fact that he hired Becky Hammon is because he truly believes that she can help the franchise. And for those that don't know, Becky Hammon was the head coach in the G League. I'm sorry, in the Summer League in Las Vegas for the San Antonio Spurs, and they actually won that league. So it was, I know it's a summer league, it's completely different, but the fact that all those guys respect her and they listen to her and she knows what she's doing shows that our future as a coach is very, very bright, and she's opening a lot of doors. And I truly hope that one day, if she wants to be an NBA head coach, that she has that opportunity because I think she's going to be great.
Awesome. Thank you, Austin. Greer, you're up.
Yeah, hey Tisha, thanks for coming on Locker Room and doing this. Love to hear female voices on the platform.
You're welcome.
One question I have is, as an agent, what's it going to take for players to just play in the WNBA and no longer like go overseas? Like, what is there a dollar amount that would make, and obviously the COVID set aside, because I know some players didn't go over again this offseason because of COVID and like, its impact, but what kind of salary would the WNBA have to pay across the board for, to play year round in the WNBA?
Well, actually, with the new CBA that was signed last year, the salaries have gone up, and there's also opportunities for some players, not all of them, make some money marketing wise during the off season. And actually, according to the CBA in 2023, no players can be late for training camp, otherwise they'll be suspended. So unless you are a rookie. So because it's kind of a catch 22 because rookies are the ones that need the most money so they can go overseas, but they also should not be late for training camp. So basically you cannot be late for training camp, otherwise you can be suspended or you will be suspended. So I think in 2023 you're going to see more and more players opting for not going at least to Europe because depending on where you play in Europe, you can definitely be late for training camp. So we're going to start seeing some changes in that regard.
What's the like, and then like, what's the difference for when you're like negotiating for players to go play in Europe? Like you said, you might have, you're obviously far away from home, or you may, you're accustomed to winning in the States, but you're not going to be winning in Europe. What are like some of the priorities for players that want to play overseas? Like, what are they asking you about clubs or situations?
Well, it depends on the player, honestly. Some players is like, show me the money. I don't care where I'm going. If I'm going to Siberia and it's minus 40 every day, and if they pay me, that's where I'm going. Some players is like, I don't want to be somewhere where it's warm. Some players want to go, play in France because they want to see the Eiffel Tower. So it kind of changes for everybody. At the end of the day, everybody's different. My goal is to really know what the player wants and needs so I can provide that and provide options so then they can decide where they want to go. But if you can at least try to have, you know, safety, socially, a place where they're going to enjoy it, have some type of good salary, and being competitive, I think those are the four most important things when you head overseas, at least it was for me. Money was never number one on my list, because sometimes you can get paid, but you can be miserable in that. Probably you're not going to want to stay for the whole contract, right? So, you know, it changes on the players.
Thanks, Greg.
I just wanted to hear your relationship, if there is still one, with Cheryl Swoops and what it was like playing against her. I've heard you refer to her as like a top five player in the world at the time that you were playing in the league with her. And so I just want to hear your thoughts on her. I was adding that I got to meet her a couple years ago at the Final Four, and she just seems like a great human. So I just want to hear.
She is. I mean, Cheryl was definitely an amazing player. You know, MVP, Olympian, champion, I mean, you name it. And she's working for Nike now. I actually just listened to her podcast on All the Smoke with Matt Barnes. And you know, she's doing well. She tried the coaching thing and she said it wasn't for her, but she's somebody that, you know, we had great battles between Sacramento and Houston. And a lot of times I had to guard her, and she's probably one of the fastest, like, first step that I've ever had to guard. And I have nothing but respect for Cheryl. You know, she's somebody that did a lot for women's basketball.
Yes, she did. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Awesome. Thanks.
Hey, first off, I want to start by saying this is awesome. I've used Locker Room for a while now to host the W podcast, and I'm all for W content being on here. I just wanted to ask, you know, this year is my first year really looking at the league from more of a media perspective and a coverage perspective. And it seemed to me like there's been a lot more coverage of the league. And I just wanted to hear Tisha's thoughts on, you know, how that's growing and what you like to see and what you've liked that you've saw so far in terms of coverage, especially in free agency.
Yeah. I mean, it's growing for sure. And, you know, that's the only way to grow is with media covering it. You know, and we have a lot of great media outfits that have constantly and, you know, covered the WNBA. Sometimes we want the major like outlets to continue to give it a little bit more love. But, you know, like I said before, as long as we continue to take steps forward, I'm good with it, as long as we don't take steps back. But free agency was awesome. I mean, there were so many moves and so many players changing jerseys in cities, and that I think is great for the game because it creates that buzz. The only bad thing about free agency is that it's happened in January and we have to wait until like May or June to watch, you know, these players compete. But, you know, it's been great, and I appreciate you guys supporting the WNBA, because that's what we have to do, continue to spread the word and create and generate more fans.
Awesome.
Hi, Tisha. Thank you for coming on the Locker Room. This has been an amazing room. I watch a fair amount of WNBA content, and it's increasing. I'm an Aces fan, but we don't have to talk about that. But I noticed you've played for a number of franchises, both in the WNBA and abroad, as you mentioned. And I'm just wondering, like, of all of the franchises, which one was the one that felt, I guess, like, the most historic and the most, like, fun to be a part of, you know? I imagine that there's probably some franchise that's, like, essentially, like, playing for the Lakers, you know, in men's basketball. And I'm sure you might say, maybe it was the Sparks, but I'm curious, like, what the experience was like.
To me, it was Sacramento. I played 12 years in Sacramento. That's where I was drafted. And honestly, it was a very family-like atmosphere. I love my teammates. We used to hang out all the time, even on days off. We had barbecues and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, like, truly a sisterhood. Yeah, so to me, like, I left because the team folded. But that's when I had the best times as far as, you know, being on a team. When I went to LA and Chicago, I mean, it was also great, but to me, like, the years that I spent in Sacramento were my best years as far as camaraderie and, you know, just us being a sisterhood.
Yeah, that's awesome. The entire time you were there, you were the best team in the city, which must have been nice too.
Yeah, he was.
Well, Last question I have is, actually, one small question. Do you still live in Sacramento or no?
I don't. I live in Miami now.
Wow. Okay. Beach life.
Right.
The other question I was going to have is, why Old Dominion? Can you tell me about going to ODU? I have some friends who went there, but that's a kind of a random place.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, back in 1994, the recruiting was like it was today, you know. So actually, the way that I went to Old Dominion is because the assistant coach, she played professionally in Portugal when I was 16. So I actually played against her. And after the game, she was like, oh, you should go to the States. I said, I want to, but I don't know how to go about it. And I gave her my parents' home number that was like a rotary phone, you know, the ones that you dial with your finger. Yeah. Then she just became the assistant coach at Old Dominion. So she told the head coach about me. And 2 years later, when I was 18, that's when they started recruiting me. So, I mean, it's kind of crazy. But if she would have gone somewhere else, I probably would have ended up somewhere else just because, you know, back then we didn't have internet and communication and recruiting was like it was today. So I just kind of got lucky that it was actually ended up being a great school for me and a great place for me to end up.
That's amazing. Thank you for that.
Thanks, Howard. Yashwan.
So the NBA still doesn't have a woman head coach yet. Who do you think is, you know, in line to be the first woman's head coach? And when do you think we'll actually see that happen?
To be honest with you, I don't know if the world is ready. I think the NBA guys is ready for that, but I don't know if the world is ready for a woman to be in charge and so many men. Yeah. But I mean, I would have to say Becky Hammon would be my number one choice.
Hammond,
I think,
right?
she's back in
Isn't she? Is she the assistant coach in San Antonio, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Wow, what do you think about her taking over for Popovich maybe in like 4 or 5 years?
It's possible. I mean, she knows the system. She knows the players. She's learning from the best. So I definitely could see that happening without a doubt.
Awesome. Thanks. Eli, you're up. You have a few more.
This isn't really a question about more so women's basketball or your career. It's more so a question just about basketball in general. I've watched a lot of basketball. A nice dosage of women's and men's basketball, and it seems like there's a rise in soft switching, like teams, like especially like the Luka play, for example. Like they basically let him get to his spot without any attempt to stop it. Like they let him. Are you right-handed? You're right-handed.
I am. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you know, like a shot to the right is harder for a right-handed shooter, right?
Right.
Like you want to get off of a pick, like you want to get to your left to get a shot off of it. And they just let him do it because of the switching is so soft. Do you think that's more so a product of there not being much practice, or do you think that's a product of like the direction the NBA is going in and the WNBA for that matter as well? Or you think that's just
I think in the WNBA, they play better defense, so you might have to start watching the WNBA. No, I mean, there's always this kind of stereotype that the NBA doesn't play defense until the playoffs or until the fourth quarter. But, you know, everybody knows that Luka wants to go left and, you know, shoot the step back three.
Yep.
And sometimes it's easier said than done to try to stop him. But it is true, you know, on a switch, you know, there's no trapping. There's no, hard hedge or something like that. I mean, and sometimes the switches are done with, in a very aggressive way. So then a player like that is going to be able to still get his shot off. So, I mean, yeah, I can't really comment on why that happens because I'm not coaching them. But that definitely is something that, you know, sometimes it can also be easier said than done, because when you're out there and you're defending, you know, they have so many counter moves as well. Even if you take away one thing, it's going to do something else.
Yep.
But I understand what you're saying.
Okay, we have time for one last question.
I have a question, Trisha, if that's okay.
That's up to Tisha. We have a short amount of time. We have one more left. So if you can make it quick, that would be...
Yeah, does Canada have a women's basketball team, Trisha? I'm not aware.
We don't, but if you listen to the full interview, we were advocating pretty hard to bring one to Toronto, at least. Awesome. Thank you. Kyle.
Hi, Tisha. Yeah, I just wanted to ask, earlier in the interview, you touched upon just like the future of the WNBA and how skilled these new players are coming up. I just want to get your take on a player, Sabrina Ionescu, and what you think her potential is and her ceiling for her career.
Oh, I think she has tremendous potential. Unfortunately, last year with her injury, we weren't able to really watch her much. But she had a bad debut, and then she came back and had like 32 or something. So I know that this year she's going to be healthy and she's going to be ready. And I think the whole world is going to see her compete at the highest level, which is the WNBA. And she had a whole year to really get healthy and get ready. But she's definitely undeniable, one of the biggest young stars that this game has yet to see. So we all excited to see her play a full season for the New York Liberty.
Awesome. Thank you so much for answering my question.
No problem. Tisha,
thank you so much for being with us. This was probably my favorite locker room that we've done so far and one of my favorite podcasts. For those of you listening, it's the Title League podcast, and we'll be releasing Tisha's full interview in the next couple of days, so be on the lookout for it. And we will be back at 8 p.m. Eastern with Coach David Atkins of the Washington Wizards. So if you're a Wizards fan, you can check in. And Tisha, anytime you want to come back on, we'd love to have you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you guys for having me. And you know, let's continue, like I said before, let's continue to support in women's basketball and spread the word that women can play.
100%. Thank you so much.
Have a good night, everybody. Thank you. Bye-bye.